After I was called to bar, he was lawyer by day, rapper by night.
Fels is a rapper, actor, lawyer, and cultural force whose work has consistently challenged power while making us laugh, dance, and think.
For me, the feast, the idea was showing that level of conviction, that level of confidence that I feel is a place where we should be now, just as modern day Africans, but also making sure that it's a real feast in what it carries, different genres, different styles of music, the different versions of myself.
But behind the bars, the skits, and the bad guy persona is a man who's navigating fame, faith, family, and freedom in a country that often demands silence from its creators.
I've never in my life, at any point in time, supported any goddamn politician, because Nigeria has never produced any individual worth putting yourself on the line for. They will disgrace you and they will embarrass you.
In this episode, we go deeper into the courage it takes to stay honest and the tension between visibility and integrity. Do you think we could do NSARS again? So if someone was to click into this interview and they might be going to work, they may be working out, or maybe it's a long day and this is the podcast they want to listen to, what is the one thing you can tell them about building a brand?
One thing I can say is try and be as authentic as possible with it. Try and keep in mind that one of the most important things, you know, is eventually going to be evolution. Mm-hmm. You know, so you have to already be thinking about that from the get-go, from the jump, as you're building your brand. Even if this is early stages, you have to keep in mind that it's like a journey. You know, so there will be times where that brand from this would have to go to this and then to this and then to that. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to figure out what exactly you would like for people to think about the brand, regardless of what type of brand it is, you know, what type of business. It doesn't even always have to be within this industry, you know. And then you have to be consistent with what that is, you know. It has to be, you know, just clear what your brand stands for. And yeah, like I said, consistency, bear in mind evolution, and just make sure whatever the message is strong.
So I want to pick a thread because you talk about evolution, and yeah, I love that you said that.
Yeah,
because I think a lot of people in your industry don't think through that. Mm-hmm. So they have one hit song or one hit movie or whatever, and they're like, oh, that's gonna set me for life. And yeah, they don't realize that to have staying power, there is always this element of time when you have to become something different. So I want you to talk through what evolution and what chapter are you in now?
For me, it's a place of conviction. Mm-hmm. It's a place of utmost confidence. It's a place of certainty in who I am, you know, what purpose, what legacy I want to live, and, you know, how I want to be remembered. And it's also a place where I feel like impact is the most important thing for me. You know, I think coming up at the beginning, it was wanting to prove a point. This is me. This is what I can do. These are all the different versions of me that there are, you know. But now it's like, okay, yeah, you kind of know that already, you know. Also, you've seen that for a couple of years. And so now for me is impact, is purpose, is meaning. You know, I've always kind of been I've always had that element of meaningfulness, you know, all through my career, because that's just who I am. But me now is more, that's more important than ever. Yeah, I'll say that's where I am.
And you building impact, I want to now go back to your childhood. Are there any people or any influences you had in your life that is the reason why impact and legacy is important to you today?
I'll definitely say parents, first of all. My parents, for sure. Of course, grew up in a legal background. My mom and dad are both lawyers. So ever since I was like a toddler, you know, anytime I say my name, oh, Falano is that? Which Falano is that? The same Falano? Oh, you know, there's always a story. Oh, yeah, your father did this for us. Yeah, something. Oh, this, you know, your mother from this. So there was always a story, you know. So for me, it was like, who are these people? What's going on here? What does this man do? You know, and then, of course, that made me start to take a lot more interest in that. And, you know, as a kid, of course, you aspire to be that. You know, your first role models as a child are your parents, you know, for sure. So I'll say that definitely was probably the biggest figures that we speak of. Musically, I grew up in a lot of fella, you know, because maybe coincidentally, because my dad, for a considerable amount of time, was fella's lawyer. So, you know, while we were growing up, while we were becoming, he used to just play a lot of fella records, you know, so there's like a vivid memory of me in the car, my siblings, my dad driving, and, you know, fella's just bumping on the stereo. And, you know, that way, subconsciously, I got into that music and I could almost recite every single lyric, you know, because that's just how much we heard it. And for me, I then started to listen more to this person and pay a bit more attention to what he was, the kind of iconic figure that he was. And I definitely learned a lot from that. Yeah.
Mm. And actually, speaking of your father, you know, when we were doing our research, we found that, you know, he was instrumental to saving a lot of people's lives, right? But I'm curious, you hearing that, was there a weight or pressure on you to also live up to that standard?
I didn't feel pressure. No, I would just say inspiration. I was inspired. I was inspired. Like, oh man, this is selflessness. This is sacrifice. This is just being kind. And for me, what's most exciting about it is that it's not backed up by any facade or lamba of spiritualism. You know, my dad has never really been a religious guy. Yeah. You know, and growing up, you know, I saw that. My mom, on the other hand, has always been a pastor. You know? You know, she's the one that's, you know, very religious. Yeah, but seeing him be a good person and is not backed up by, oh, religion or the gospel says you must be like this, is just who he is. You know, for me, that's the most genuine form of just being a good person. And that was really, really inspiring for me. Yeah, I would say.
So you don't know this, but I'm about to give you information, a little information. So when we, not first met, but when we did the show in California at Stanford University in 2018, that day of that show was the day of my law school graduation. So I went to law school. Crazy. So my family also comes from lawyers. But that was the day I told my family that this law thing is not for me. Skip my graduation. Let's go and do this Files show in Stanford. I remember my parents just being like, I don't understand. She, like, we sent you to school the day that I graduated. And I said to them, like, just watch, in 2-3 years, you understand this decision was the right one, right? Yeah. The reason why I'm asking this question is you come from a family of legal luminaries, right? You've made the choice to transition to music. What is that internal conversation with yourself? Because I literally remember vividly saying to myself, I don't think this is for me, but I'm the only one who believes this for now. I need to go work to make sure that nobody ever questions whether this was the right choice I made or not. So what was that internal conversation, like rebellion versus like reinvention, which is basically what you were doing at the time?
I would say the conversation was more like time would arrange everything. You know, I felt like everything was sort of arranged by itself and I would know, you know. So at the time, straight out of uni, I already knew, you know, I wanted to do music. But, you know, there was this one, which I was still doing, which is law. And I still had to go to law school, you know, to you know, be officially called to bar as a lawyer. And I was like, no, I'm not going to quit. I'm going to finish this, P. Even though I know this is what I want to do, I still want to finish this. And yeah, I'm going to keep on doing this, even though I know this is what I want to do. But I know that eventually it will arrange. What I'm supposed to do will show itself. Yeah. And that was just what I was working with, because I'm just a big believer in what's meant to be will be. Now, it's not for like, okay, just chill. I was meant to be will be. No. What's meant to be will be, but still put everything in place to, you know, achieve whatever it is that your heart desires. And if it's meant to be, then it will be. You know, so I was still pushing that. you know, like, okay, this is what I want to do, but I was still working. In fact, after I was called to bar, I was practicing as a lawyer still. Yeah, with my dad and my dad's fam. I was practicing as a lawyer. And it was lawyer by day, rapper by night. Superman Clark Kent, bro. You know, go court for morning, come out, you know, come out my tie, you know, come out everything, change to mufti. Enter streets, you know. I remember being on the come up and just really always having to do that switch. It was a lot, but for me, it was even exciting. You know, I've always liked to do things, just do a lot. Because for me, it's like, why must I only do this? Yeah. Bro, if I can do this and this, then why not? Yeah. I've always been a why not person. Mm-hmm. I've always been curious to know why not. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a lot of, it's a thing that a lot of us need to do more. Mm-hmm. Ask questions. Why not? You've been told this is this, but why does it have to be this? Why can't it be this? Yeah. You know, for me, that was like the ginger. That was what was going through my mind. Why can't I do this and this and this? And then eventually, this picked up. Mm. And then I knew this is the one I really wanted to do. Okay, well, so now time has told for itself what I'm meant to be doing. And so I told this one that, bro, sorry, yo. You're going to have to chill for this guy because this guy has picked up. And this is the actual guy, you know, but this guy was helping me, keeping me afloat during that time, you know, whether it be financially, whether it just be, because if you're idle, you know, go get yourself. So I was active still. And this guy was keeping me alive while I was pursuing this dream.
Yeah.
So that's what it was like for me.
You once said everything you do is a reaction out of compassion, right? But how do you stay soft in a country that hardens people daily?
Oh, my brother, it's very hard. Very hard. I'm not soft too. It's very hard to be soft, man. It's incredibly tough. It's incredibly tough. I think the more you exist here, the more you start to see just how much of a jungle we're in, man. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And it's sad, especially if you really do believe, if you're a core Africanist or Pan-Africanist, and you really do believe that, you know, there is somewhere that we're meant to be. And, you know, we're falling so grossly below potential. And it's so disheartening, you know, to see that every day. And it breaks me, bro. Yeah. Constantly breaks me. But you know, you can't just be broken all the way. You know, you still have to find it in you, because at the end of the day, I believe love and humanity are the greatest number one things that we ought to hold like this. You know, even beyond spirituality or religion or any of that, love and humanity, those are the most important things.
Because you talked about sometimes it breaks you a little bit. Something we play around a lot with ChatGPT and AI, and you ask it about yourself and it gives you like feedback. Have you felt that, you know, sometimes there's a prophetic burden to like some of the weight you carry, which is sometimes are you the person who just sees some of these things early and you have to wait for people to like catch, but that wait can be years. It just basically like Noah building the ark, right? How does that like resonate with you, where you're like, look, I was telling these people this thing 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and maybe now they might be starting to understand. Being able to stand in that loneliness, that gap, while people catch up, how have you navigated that?
It can be frustrating, bro. It can be very frustrating because, you know, when you see something and you just cannot understand why everybody can't see it. Bro, it's the most frustrating thing. But you also at some point realize that everyone is not the same.
Yeah.
You know, everyone can't think in the same way. Everyone can't realize everything at the exact same time. Yeah. So, you know, with that, I just sort of hold my own and believe that, okay, eventually they'll come around. Mm. You know, even the place where I am now, that I speak of utmost conviction and confidence. I look around me and there's so many people that they're not even near here. But as an African existing in 2025. This is where you ought to be. Mm-hmm. Knowing that there is so much ingenuity in you, mm-hmm. knowing that your craftsmanship, knowing that your industry, knowing that your mind is your greatest asset, and there's absolutely nothing that we're incapable of, you know, but it's tough also to give that message to somebody that's being traumatized. You know, we're talking years and years and decades of oppression yeah. and being suppressed and being made to believe that you're nothing.
Yeah.
You know, so I can understand. Everybody will not come around at the same time, but we have to come around fast because really and truly, I think it's been a while. And I think if we carry on like this, then when are we going to move forward? Mm-hmm. Are we ever going to move forward? Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know.
I'm curious, can you name an instance of where that happened? Where maybe there's something you've been talking about or saying, and it wasn't until years later that it came into fruition. Everyone's like, oh, he's been saying this thing.
So I might not be able to practically say, yeah. oh, this one thing. Yeah. It'll be tough to think about it. But, you know, there definitely are moments where, you know, you think something or you say something, you know, but it'll be hard to say, oh, this instance or that instance, but I definitely have felt like that a couple of times. Mm. Yeah.
And also, you know, I think one thing I've noticed about you is you're very honest.
I am.
Radically honest.
I am.
So can you talk about, has that hurt you or helped you, you feel?
I think maybe I'm too honest now. You know, I realize, and maybe I'm too honest. And people don't understand that concept, especially on this side of the world. And I was just telling a couple of friends yesterday, we were having a conversation, and I said that we're mad in this place because everybody's a pretender. Mm. I mean, big shout out to Fals Bad Guy. And Demi V, because we did a song called Hypocrite, and this is pretty much what this song is about. Everybody is putting on this facade, but deep down it's a completely different thing that they are. You know, we're so deeply religious as a people, and we claim to be this, but really and truly, we're the most evil people. Mm. So dark in the mind. Just in the way that we treat our neighbor.
Yeah.
Oh man, it's terrible. And for me, it's like, why are you saying that you are this? When really, you are not this.
Mm.
Why don't you just be honest with yourself?
Mm.
You know, and I've realized that for people don't grab that. Mm. So that's why a lot of times, when I do this, I do this, I do that, they say, ah, he's doing this because, oh, maybe, oh, he wants to run for office.
Mm.
So this is Zoom Lamba that is setting.
It's always a Lamba.
Why must there always be a Lamba? Bro, can somebody not just have heart? Okay, well, I guess nobody has heart.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I've come to realize, that people just don't grab. But at the end of the day, man, this is me. And, you know, I'm not going to now start not being who I am because I shouldn't be too honest. This is just who I am, bro. You know, this is just who I am. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you talk about religion. What is your relationship with it now?
I mean, no, I mean, I've recently spoken about religion, and you know, there's been a whole ruckus. But I think religion is important.
Mm.
I think religion is important in what it does for people, and you know, even they will tell you in like sociology, and it's the opium of the people.
Mm.
You know, the people need something to hold on to,
yeah,
because people, a lot of people can't really think for themselves, and you know, they'll be really loose without having something sacred something, you know, the you know, the sacred thing, Sha, to look forward to or to look up to, you know. So I really see the importance of religion. But I think just at the center of it all, what's most important is that everybody still has sense. No, my brother, I said it all. Big shout out to Fuzzy Bad Guy again. Because there's a song on my new album, The Feast, where I say, chop gospel, chop orisha, chop science, chop where. Just make sure you chop sense. So like, it's whatever it is you want to believe in, that's beautiful. That's because at the end of the day, you cannot tell me that the one I believe is the correct, is not the correct one, or that the one you believe is the correct one, because who are you to say that? So chop whatever it is you are chopping, but just still make sure that at the core of it, you have sense. We see so many instances where people are being taken advantage of, you know, under the guise of religion. We see so many people take up arms, so many people strap themselves up with explosives under the guise of religion. Is this all still religion? What are we doing? So, you know, and that's what I was talking about. And I said, still mentioned earlier on about people being hypocritical. Look at how many people around you are so poor, so deeply, deeply poor. You are in your bubble, chopping away all this money, but you are a pastor. You are Daddy Gio. Come on, man. Yeah. What are we really doing? You know, so it's, let's have sense, please. And, you know, that's all I'll say. You know, I see the importance of religion, you know, in terms of keeping people afloat, keeping people
hopeful,
keeping people sort of stable. A lot of people, maybe the reason why they don't commit so much crime is because God will punish them. Maybe, or maybe not, because we really don't know, but maybe. And that's why I say I see the importance of it.
It definitely plays a role. I wanted to switch to, we talked about how your dad represented Fela. Your dad was also arrested many times for defending other people, right? What did that feel like as a child? And how did it shape your understanding of what sacrifice really costs?
For a considerable amount of time, while I was growing up as a toddler, there would be times where my dad wouldn't even be around. And, you know, when we would ask my mom where he was, she would say he traveled. At the time, obviously, we were too young to even know what the hell was going on, because when he comes back, he will buy us Capri Sun. All right, Bina, we're happy, we'll drink it. Oh, welcome, Daddy. But it was later on that I started to realize he was in detention those times, you know, because a lot of times he would combat the military regime, you know, and from Babangida to Abacha, you know, that entire era, it was a lot, and he was being detained a lot of these times. And for me to see a man have his freedom taken from him for this cause consistently, not once, not twice, and come out and go right back into it. Bro, that's a different kind of sacrifice. Do you understand? So for me, I think it just kind of cleared my eye, like, you know, to what it really means, what sacrifice really means. Because sometimes you think that sacrifice is, oh, I have 1 million, and I can give you two. I can give you two out of it because I have 1 million. But bro, sacrifice might really mean giving you 999,000 out of it, you know. And that's what I really saw there. And it definitely changed my perspective of what sacrifice is.
I think going back to even that mindset, right, where most people, they get punched, they're like, okay, let's chill. Even from like your enemy's perspective, what does that do to a person who you're going up against? Like, okay, I might have more power than your dad. I might have whatever, but this man is going to keep coming every single time. What do you think that informed, like, whether it was the government or people who just said, when it comes to your dad, just give him space, because this is the sort of mindset that he has every single time.
Yeah, and I think you know, you pretty much said it, you know, even within that question. That's the outlook of it. You know, with anybody, with even, like, I'm a big football fan, and if you're playing football and as an attacker, if there's a defender that you are dribbling, but as soon as you dribble him, he'll come back again. Yeah. He'll come back. Bro, at some point, you said you go tired. Say, bro, just take this ball. What's it worry you? Yeah. You know, it's like yeah. that. It's yeah. it's like that. You have to be resilient with your spirit, man. Mm. And, you know, that has also taught me the meaning of resilience. Mm. Bro, you have to keep on bouncing back. Mm. Like, you have to just keep on. They should never be able to break your spirit, my bro. Mm. Yeah, so that I think redefined resilience for me.
Yeah. How have you managed to stay grounded through it all, right? I think a lot of the conversations we've had with some other folks is like, there's nothing like the euphoria of a hit song where like, yo, the song is blown, you're going everywhere, people are singing it. How have you managed to, and you can talk through like the friends that you've kept around you, the family that's also there. How have you managed to stay grounded through it all? Especially because you now live in an age where somebody can be so high that when they're then coming down, they don't know what that looks like and how to navigate that. So how do you manage staying level-headed through it all?
You have to constantly remind yourself that this is a marathon. You know, at the end of the day, yeah, this is popping now, but what next? We spoke about building a brand earlier on and just the importance of evolution, you know, and knowing that at some point in time, you have to change it up. You have to keep on going. So reminding yourself that it's not about the moment, you know, there is a long run ahead and yeah, this is popping now and this is hot now, but you have to think about what next and what after that and what after that and what after that. So I think that's, you know, what's most important for me. And also what I think is important to have is discipline. Discipline is the most important thing. As a creative is tough because even within work, it's hard to know when to stop.
Yeah.
You're just creating and it's looking beautiful and it's going and you just want to keep on going. But somebody have to tell yourself, Oga, you don't complete. You know, so discipline is one of the most important things, I think, for a creative. And that will help you know. That will help you stay grounded as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Feast, right? It's your most personal project yet. What part of yourself did you put into this album that people might not notice on the first listen?
On first listen, you might not know that this is actually my most conscious project. Yeah. Now, people are used to me serving my consciousness in your face. Very literally, very confrontational. My album, my 2019 album titled Moral Instruction was in your face. The This Is America rejig I did, This Is Nigeria, was in your face. It was very... So a lot of people are used to that sort of conscious music that I've made. On this one, I decided to go a completely different route.
Yeah.
Because like I said, rejig, evolve, rearrange it. Let them not see you coming, you know. So I decided to lace it in a way that you don't really, or you may not at first know what this song is about, but you must. It is compulsory for you to catch the vibe.
Yeah.
The vibe is undeniable.
Yeah.
Like, what is this music? What am I listening to? Then you listen over and over again. Then maybe on the fifth listen, or maybe on the 10th listen, it is certain that you would pick up a few lyrics and you would now, it will now dawn on you that this is what this guy was talking about here. That was very intentional with this, you know. The message wasn't in your face. The message is there, but you have to listen to be able to hold on to it. And that's what I wanted to do with this album. That's how I intended to serve it differently.
Yeah. How do you decide what part of yourself to reveal in the music?
I think it depends on the concept of the song. If it's a single, the song. If it's an album, the project, what's the concept of this project? What's the meaning? What's the message? For me, the Feast, the idea was showing that level of conviction, that level of confidence that I feel is a place where we should be now, just as modern day Africans. But also making sure that it's a real feast in what it carries, the different genres, different styles of music, the different versions of myself, you know. So it's a lot. I'm talking about making conscious music now, but the very last track on this album, it's like my entire journey, you know, as from being a boy to becoming an artist. And it's almost like a memoir. And there's just so much flavor on this project, you know, and I couldn't think of a, you know, better title than The Feast.
When you were coming up in your career, right? Yeah. I feel like there are conscious decisions some artists make. It feels like you've always used humor as a blade, like in your music, right? When do you let people see the man behind the mask, right? Because it's like humor, I've always felt like it's such a intelligent way to navigate things. And I've always felt like when I start listening to music, it's always tongue in cheek. But that I feel like the country has become so poor, people don't even understand what tongue in cheek means sometimes. So when I listen to the music, I'm like, oh, that was witty, that was this. But then you might be talking to some other people and the country is so hard, they're like,
they didn't even grab it.
I was like, how did you not catch the tongue in cheek in that? But how did you make that conscious decision to start using humor to convey the message in the music?
I'll say I stumbled on it, you know. I don't want to sit down here and say, oh,
strategize.
I'm the master genius. Remember that? I stumbled on it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie to you, you know. I'm just a lover of humor.
Yeah.
And I love a good laugh. Yeah. And, you know, at these early stages, I used to really just chill and kick back and have a good laugh with like friends and siblings.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was just this way that we used to talk, just to like mess around. And I remember the first time I had recorded a video of it and posted it up, I saw the reaction. Because prior to that, I didn't realize how crazy that P was outside of my little circle and, you know. But then I saw that and I was like, oh, so I've been keeping this from the world. prior to that, I already used to lace my lyrics here and there with humor, but it was just limited to that. Now I saw that there was a possibility of bringing out this character into real life and making this character a thing on his own. And bro, boy, did I hold on to that. I definitely held on to that.
Yeah.
And then I built a whole character around that.
Yeah.
And you know, that I would say was the magic. You know, prior to that, I don't think there was anything existing like this before, you know, let alone existing in a musical artist, because primarily I was still coming through as, okay, this guy is a rapper, but he also has this entire new character, you know. So it was just crazy. And you know, prior to that, there was nothing like it. There was nothing like it. Yeah.
And actually, I want to talk about your new project. Can you walk us through how did it start? Like, was it like, it's time? Was it maybe contractual? Like, I have to do it? Or were you inspired by one thing and it kind of started building the pieces?
Yeah. Everything. Yes to all, everything. yes, it's time. Yes, it's been on for a while. And yes, things were happening that were building the pieces. I'll tell you, this project has been in the works maybe actively, maybe like the last 3-4 years. You know, it's been in the works, but I just knew there would come a time for its release. You know, I was patient and meticulous with the crafting of it. But the events that kind of led to arriving here was just me looking around and seeing that today we're complaining about this. Tomorrow we are complaining about this. There is no economy is bad. Currency is down. There is no light. People are suffering. Yeah. People are poor. There's so many issues. I look outside. I remember like 2020, you know, around that time, as we were having NSAS here, there was Black Lives Matter here. There was something going on in Sierra Leone. There was something happening in Uganda.
Ethiopia too.
In Ethiopia. Then shortly after that, I think it was the war in Ukraine. And then we saw how black people, they were being just thrown out. And I started to see that just everywhere, there was a lot of us fighting. And it just seems like we're the downtrodden, you know, and it ought not to be like that. Because when you really, really check them, physically, we are the strongest. We are the most intelligent. Because if you look at people that are rightly placed all over the world, they're excelling. Sports-wise, we are thriving. Is it athletics? Is it football? Look at the best players now. They are Africans. Even if they're playing for France, they are Africans. They are Africans, my brother. Where we are nicely placed, we excel. There is no doubt that we're capable of it. So what is the problem? Then it dawned on me, for so long, we have been made to be, and we have now internalized it. They were incapable. They were less than good. If I saw you now and I complimented your outfit, oh, I like this fit. The first thing a default, maybe Nigerian or maybe even African would say is, oh, it's imported. To you, that's a flex. But are you crazy? What is the one you are making in your country? But in actual fact, that is the only way that we can move forward. You can't just keep on bringing everything from inside. Of course, your economy will crumble. It's like simple mathematics. It's not. I don't even know maths. I don't know economics. But I know that I cannot be buying food every day from outside. I need to grow it.
Money will finish.
If I don't grow it in my house, I'll be cooking my own.
There's no rice at home.
Simple, my brother. Yeah. I don't have to be an economist. Yeah. Are you going to tell me that these people in charge of our affairs don't know this? Are you going to tell me that? But of course, they are very strong Christians. They're very strong Christians and Muslims.
You've had time, and I'm glad that we talked about 2020. It's been almost five years now since 2020 and the end SARS. What are your reflections now about that time period? And the gap has been like 5 years. So when you sit back now and reflect around that time period, how do you process and how do you think about that time?
Ah, oh, man, with a heavy heart. With a heavy heart, with a lot of mixed emotions, you know, mixed feelings and, you know, tragedy is probably the most prominent of those emotions in the way that it just covers that entire period. It was a very dark time, a very, very dark time. But I choose to look at the light in the entire occurrence and the entire flow of events. And, you know, what I would say was the brightest moment or, you know, the most important takeaway for me was just in seeing the possibility of what could be, the way we all came together and the way everything was happening so quickly when we did come together, you know, and it's just really clear from that that's all it takes. Community, us being together, acting together, in concert with each other. And once we realize this, that is all the magic that it takes. I cannot sit down here and think of myself as, or let me say first, as a Yoruba man. Of course I'm a Yoruba man. Of course I'm the proudest to be that. But I am Niger. In fact, I am African first. And I shouldn't be hindered or deceived, because we've seen a lot of that happen as well, by any tribal sentiment. A lot of cheap tactics. Cheap tactics that all these evil-minded people have peddled and successfully. Because we allowed it. But And this is one of those things, now I've remembered. Okay. This is one of those things you were asking earlier on. Like, can you not see? Are you blind?
Yeah.
Ah. And it's madness, man.
I was thinking even around that time, because, you know, we were doing a lot of the protests back in the diaspora around that time, but that you would think that by now, the Hausa man should know that his salvation will not come from another Hausa man. The Yoruba man should know that his salvation will not come from another Yoruba man. Yep. The Igbo man should know that his salvation will not come from 100%. Another Igbo man. And after 50 years of making the bet on, just because this person speaks the same language like me, shares the same, clothes or tradition as me, doesn't mean that they have my best interest at heart. And it was also one of the reasons why we honestly started Afropolitan, which was like, how can we bring people together to organize around shared values and purpose at scale that cuts across like these petty divides, you know? So I think the question there is, where do we go sometimes from here? Like, where do you think that the future generations looking back at this moment can say, okay, we took this from this moment and this is what we can improve on?
And actually, hold on. Yeah. I even want to buttress that with, do you think we could do NSARS again? Like, not in that specific format, but a format where young people come together for a very specific cause.
I think we, 100%.
Yeah.
I think there's no bounds to what we can do. Mm. I think we can do so much, you know. The rawest form of something is usually like the best form of it, because from that you can make so much.
Yeah.
We're still very, very raw, very crude.
Early. You know,
just in our existence and in the way that we are. And so there's still so much that can be done. Mm-hmm. All we have to do is just realize all these things that we're saying. The importance of community, being realized, thinking about the communal, removing this individualistic, oh, now just me and my family. If we are okay, I beg, make me adjust. I don't send this person. I don't send that person. We have to kind of move together.
Yeah.
You know, it's really important. You know, there's a lot of chatter recently about what's going on in Burkina Faso.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this and that. Why? Because the way that he came into power, he's a military guy.
Yeah.
So it was via a coup, right? There's like three countries, you know, Burkina Faso,
Mali and Niger,
you know, and they've taken power somewhat forcefully.
Mm-hmm.
But what they are doing with that power is inspiring people.
Yeah.
So there's like this and that, because some people are saying, ah, I beg, they force their way into power.
Mm-hmm.
While others are like, but look at what they are doing.
Mm-hmm.
They're realizing the need to focus on them.
Mm-hmm.
The French have had such a stronghold on these places for so long.
Yeah.
And for them, it's like, bro, it's enough is enough now.
Yeah.
We just want to be.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to realize, that we can't be by ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to be by ourselves, because that's what we were before they even came.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot of conversations, some people say maybe African or a lot of African countries need a benevolent dictator.
Yeah.
And, you know, they point to examples of some of the countries in Africa where that's maybe working. But I remember, like, one of the pushbacks I've always had against that is we shouldn't be moving from so much scarcity that we think that the only way we can thrive is if there's a dictator who's telling us what to do, especially because we know that there are examples all across the world, whether it's in the Scandinavian countries or in the Baltics, where there's thriving democracies, where people can debate, but there's lights, there's roads. They can agree that the common sense things should be common sense things. And now if you want to now start fighting about whether you want pepperoni on your pizza or you want plantain or pineapple, debate that. But let's not be debating the most basic things. What are your thoughts around like that?
I agree with you in the sense that it doesn't have to be by force.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be by force. And with life as well, if you see that this person is thriving in life, you look at them. You look at what they're doing right.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily copy everything they are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, you like all those people for school. We go copy person, we'll copy their name, join. Come on, I used to wait till they worry you.
Yeah.
Ah, look at what they're doing right.
Yeah.
See how you can adapt that to your situation and your personal beliefs. Mm-hmm. You don't have to believe that there must be a dictator mm-hmm. or an authoritarian mm-hmm. person. You get? Mm-hmm. But what are they doing right yes. that you feel like you also need in your own side? Mm-hmm. And that's, I saw this thing, something about prison reforms mm-hmm. over there, getting prisoners to work on the farm mm-hmm. and with how much time you put in on the farm, it would result in them taking off some time off your sentence. And it's like rehabilitation plus
productivity.
Bro, my head buzzed. Because it's like this, and it seems so simple.
Yeah.
It seems so simple. Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know. And it's not like these guys are not hearing this news. Yeah. I'm not seeing all these things. But do they care about us?
No.
Of course not. But again, they will posture like they are the most.
Actually, but I have a question. So we're gonna head into election season next year. Is there any plans?
Is that next year already?
Yeah, it's almost next year. Yeah, no.
23 plus 4, 27.
Abby. Yeah, no, so they'll start
the campaigning. Yeah. And of course. So stressful. Imagine thinking about it. Are you already stressed? Yes.
Yeah. But during that period, is there not even? I'm not even really asking if you're running or anything like that, but more so from the perspective.
I'm running away.
But in the perspective, is there, because you've been quite vocal about every administration, is there anything you want to do to continue that during this upcoming season?
I'm always going to be vocal. Mm. There's nothing, like I said earlier, I've learned a different meaning of resilience. Mm. I've learned a different meaning of sacrifice. Mm. So you cannot redefine those words to me.
Yeah.
I'm always going to be vocal. Today, tomorrow, next tomorrow, 5,000 years from now, I'm always going to be vocal.
Yeah.
That is just the way that I've been built. It's too late to change me.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, am I going to... I've seen also a lot of like people talk here and there online about, oh, this person supported this person. I've never in my life... Mm. At any point in time, whether impliedly or expressly, supported any goddamn politician. Because Nigeria, again, has never produced any individual worth putting yourself on the line for. They will disgrace you and they will embarrass you. So... I've never done that.
Yeah.
I've always clamored for people to go out, exercise the civic duty to vote, because it's important for us to vote. Mm. I've always clamored for the importance of a transparent democratic system. Mm. Allow people express themselves. Mm. Don't go there and start snatching ballots, snatch beating people, start killing. Come on, man.
You have been compared to Fela, right? But Fela died misunderstood and persecuted.
Okay.
How do you reflect on his life choices, especially towards the end of his life or even within his life? Like, what are some of the things you're saying? These are the mistakes he made. These are the choices he made that were right. And how do I make sure I don't necessarily repeat those same mistakes?
Interesting. Very interesting question. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you this. Mm. I'm in no position.
Yeah.
I think it might be slightly disrespectful to his legacy to say that these are the mistakes he made. These are, who am I? Everyone's different.
Yeah.
Everyone's different. Mm. Every life decision that Fela made, he made it resting on his core belief that was what he needed to do. Fela married 27 women in one ceremony. One single ceremony. 27 women. Why did he marry them? These people were being... there was a dark cloud around them. Mm. Oh, they are dancing with Fela. You know, there was a life that people as kind of associated with him, and he didn't like that. He didn't want that. And for him, he was making that decision based on another level of sacrifice, we're talking about, you know.
To cover them.
And that was why he did that. Now, a different person might not do that because it seems like, oh, whoa, that's a lot. But Fela believed that that was what he needed to do at that point in time. Yeah. And everyone is different. Everyone is different. He was a very special creature in the way that he lived his life, in the way that he made music. But we can never deny that he was a genius.
Yeah.
He was an icon. He was a movement on his own. My own life choices will be based on my own beliefs, not based on trying to correct anyone's wrongs or anything like that. You know, I've always believed that everyone is different. Yeah, that's what I would say to that.
No 27 wives for you.
But that's not in the plans. We never know tomorrow.
So we're going to get into our rapid fire segment, which is where we ask, like, you know, revealing questions, but you answer fast, not surface. Do you want to start or you want me to start?
Okay. What's one truth you are still scared to say out loud?
I'm scared to say it out loud. Why would I not say it? I can't even think of it. I guess that we are mad. We are very mad.
Okay. What privilege are you still learning to unpack?
Celebrity privilege. It's still new every time. It's still fresh.
It's still
exciting.
After 10 plus years.
It's still exciting, my bro. It's still exciting. Yeah.
Is it because you're grateful for it or is it humbled by it?
Or maybe because also being in the limelight, most people look at you as the giver or the one that is meant to be given. So you aren't really constantly gifted, you know, within personal relationships, people aren't really saying, oh, take this, I got this for you. So when that comes from celebrity privilege, it's still oh, nice. This is cute. This is exciting. You know, so maybe that's kind of why. But I don't know. It's still fresh. It's still fresh.
Well, what's one song or what's your favorite song from this new album, this new project?
Oof. Oh, man, it's tough. It's really tough. Like I was saying earlier on, this is a very, very special project. A very special project. Just in its meaningfulness and its, you know, the way that everything that it's taken to put it together. If I had to choose, I would say the last track, Storytime, only because of how personal it is. It's my story.
Yeah.
It's my life. And a friend of mine was just saying to me yesterday that, and I think he's right. Yeah, this song is amazing and it's being raved about now in the moment, but this song would even be more meaningful a lot later on. Maybe even long after you're gone. And I was like, bro, I actually see what you mean. You know, because it's just, it's a different, it's literature. You know, it's a different kind of song. Yeah. And for that reason, you know, and just how personal it is, then I guess I'll pick it.
Yeah.
What's the most sacred value you inherited from your parents?
Most sacred value?
Mm-hmm.
I would say sacrifice and resilience, for sure.
What's one freedom you haven't earned yet?
Ah, I don't know. There's no freedom I've not earned.
Why not?
Why not? Who are you to lose my freedom? Come on. That is even triggering me.
was there a time and you can walk us back to that time, when you're man, I've blown. What was that first time for you where you're more, this music thing is going. This is not going to be my life.
I think watching my following grow on social media.
Yeah.
From maybe 5,000. To a million within a very short space of time. You know, I might not have the exact figures now in terms of the time frame, but it was a really short space of time. And for me, it was what's going on? Yeah, I think that was a moment for me that it dawned on me. Because it now felt okay, now you're performing to a crowd. Yeah.
Do you ever feel especially because you're always so early to things and you're very perceptive and it feels like you also have a very discerning spirit. How do you navigate the industry, especially industry politics, relationships? In the entertainment space, it's always felt a lot more superficial. right? And how have you learned to navigate that and establish like proper boundaries?
Keeping a distance. Keeping a distance. A lot of people wouldn't have much to say about me within the, even whether within the industry or outside the industry too. That's why people always try to fabricate stuff. But a lot of people wouldn't have much to say about me within the industry because I try my best to keep my distance. Just because I know that people are really hard to trust. There have been times I've tried to get close to people and I've seen early enough that it just wasn't a good idea. Maybe I can count on one hand within the industry people that I really feel are genuine people. And these are my guys, you know. But outside of that, it's really tough. And I just try to keep my distance as much as I can.
What part of your legacy do you hope outlives you?
I'll say just all-around impact and this value of sacrifice that we're speaking of, you know. I would hope that this is a value that I've inherited and I hope also survives me.
And speaking of that, if your name was never remembered, but your message never died, would that be enough?
I told you it's a different podcast.
That's a crazy one. Oh, yes for me. Yes for me, because again, it's not about me. It's not about me. It's the communal sacrifice. You know, it's not about me. It's the communal. So if the message went and everybody fixed up
and there's lights
and there's lights and there's water and there's money and there's food, but my name was not remembered, I'm okay.
As long as there's a feast.
But the, thank you. There's a feast. Thank you.
What's a lie you believed about success in your 20s that you no longer carry?
Maybe that, oh, once you make it, you can never be broke again. money can finish. You know, early enough, you don't really know how money works. You just think, I've made it. Money can finish. You just, you have to be really wise and you have to arrange your cards right so that you can keep on going and going and keep on going. You know, it's a marathon, bro.
What advice do you have for the newer artists, right? Who are like, look, I have my hit song. I feel like I've blown. I've made it. No more money problems. But like you always say, it's a marathon, not a sprint. How should they really think about their journey and their career in the longest term possible, especially because there might come that time when they have to reinvent? How should they approach it?
I'd say they should save. They should invest. They should, you know, like now you're making money. Now it seems like you're up. You know, things are going well. Excuse me. Don't just blow all that money. You know, take some, invest in your future, because there will come a time where it wouldn't be as popping as it is, but you need that to keep you going, you know, to help you to rejig yourself and go again and again and again. So, that's what I would say. Just, you know, think about the future. Don't focus too much on the now.
So lastly, we often talk about cultural power. What's a form of influence you admire that is invisible? Because we know it's not religion.
Like goodwill, I would say. You know, I think I've really admire, you know, just putting forward a, you know, really positive outlook of yourself that, you know, makes people want to emulate you. You know, I really admire that.
Well, the last question we ask every single guest on the Afropolitan podcast is, who do you want to see in that chair? And whose story do you think needs to be told?
Who do I want to see in this chair? That's a very interesting question. I think you should bring on Odumodu Black. I had him on my album. And around the time we were recording, we spoke quite a bit. And he's full of gems. Bro, he's full of gems. He is a hilarious character and he has stories. Stories for days. So I think you should, I'll, you know, also really like to hear his take on a lot of these. These are you know, this is definitely not the regular, you know, big shout out to you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, people need to do things more different because a lot of stuff, you know, is, you know, they're not trying to be as original as they should. Mm. I think more people should be, you know, big shout out to you guys for
thank
that.
You. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for stopping by.
Well, thank
no
you.
No problem. No problem.